Hey, I'm Casey, and you're listening to the Improv Conspiracy Podcast, and I'm talking about the good and the bad of intimacy and consent in improv.
The Improv Conspiracy Podcast with your host, Bronny.
Hello there, my friends. Welcome. Good to have you. Thanks for being here. What's going on in your life? Me, I just ate a donut. It was yummy. Original glaze from All Day Donuts. Good times. Not an ad, just an ad. One other thing going on in my life is this podcast where I talk to an improviser about a little niche area of improvisation that they are passionate about. Today, the person is Casey Beeler. The topic is intimacy and consent. Casey is an improviser from Austin, Texas at the Hideout Theater. She's also an actor, director, painter, graphic designer, web designer, fine artist, so many, many things. She's an unstoppable creative. You can see a bunch of their work at Casey Beeler on Instagram or caseybeeler.com. You can check out some virtual shows from their team, Parallelogramophonograph, at thehideouttheater.com. I'll have all those links in the show notes. It's a really good time. I met Casey back in 2014 and have since been to Austin twice and seen all the performers at the Hideout Theater, not all of them, but so many of them in many shows. And I'm always so impressed by the foundations of agreement and support that is so ever present in every performer there. I'm always in awe of the performance level, the production level, everything at the Hideout Theater makes me come home each time and want to better the work that we do here, which I think is a cool thing. And not enough people talk about how cool the Hideout Theater is. So I was stoked that Casey was keen to talk to me about intimacy and consent. She's got some great stuff to say, and I'll throw it straight to them now. Here she is, Casey Beeler, my friends.
So there's a subject in improv that I don't feel like we talk about enough, which is twofold: intimacy in improv, or intimacy on stage, but especially intimacy in improv. It's different even than scripted work, and consent in improv. And I don't think I always put the two together, because when I started out doing intimacy in improv, I just wanted to see more improv that was filled with nice things, like improvisers kissing on stage and that feeling real, or platonic intimacy where if people were best friends, they would like high five or hug, or like a sports team, you know, the fun stuff in improv where people touch each other and it's funny and it's warm and it's loving. And I wanted more of that. So I started teaching intimacy workshops that was just about kind of creating a space where people who wanted to do that kind of work could try it out. So I taught a lot of workshops in Austin and then later around the world, where I was sort of sit there and like kind of coach people into leaning in and like having their first kiss in a scene. And it would often happen in my class, which was so funny and weird to me at the same time, because it's not like I don't do very intimate improv, but it's not like I'm not a psychologist. I'm not a romance coach. I'm an artist. I'm a painter. But I did come from a scripted theater background, and I remember having to do more intimate stuff for that. And then in film as well, I've had to do some more intimate work. So it seemed strange when it was missing from improv. So I was teaching that. And as time went on over the years, especially getting into like, I guess maybe 2016, 2017, a lot of talk about consent started coming up in the work. And I think it's related to the Me Too movement, but it was something people were talking about more, because a lot of people's intimacy experience in improv, it became clear, was their first memory was being violated by intimacy, where they hadn't really had a chance to feel out kissing on stage or touching on stage before some other person grabbed them and did that to them as a joke. So then they were really afraid to ever go there again. And so then we had this weird situation in improv, especially with comedy, where people are avoiding touching because they're afraid of what might happen, but then we're not having those beautiful, lovely moments. And those would maybe only come from like experienced troops that had worked together for a long time, or teams or shows. And I realized that as part of my like teaching, coaching, directing, I don't know that I was leaving space for consent or even had the language to talk about what we were doing in those terms. So that became, it became necessary. Like they became married to each other, those two parts of the conversation. And I started teaching consent in the intimacy courses. So we would practice just like saying no, which was so weird because if you have ever taken a level one class, you practice saying yes. And I even teach a deep yes and class, but this was like somebody, like in part of the exercise, and I'll just say it right now in case that's useful to anybody, is, you know, I would say, Kate, can I touch your elbow? And then Kate would say, no, you cannot. And then I say, thanks for letting me know. And then Kate says, thanks for telling me. And we just do that. And it, you know, and then we have one where after that we have it where it's like, you ask, and if they're okay with it, you can do that. But you can also say, wait, never mind, I don't want to touch your elbow. And then they say, thanks for letting me know. And that the big part of it was like being able to practice saying no, which for some people felt silly. They were like, I don't need to practice this. But other people would say like, oh my gosh, I need to say this out loud. I'm not comfortable saying no out loud. And some people even try and soften the blow and be like, no, you can't touch my elbow right now, but maybe later you could. And it's just because I'm just today. And I was to tell them like, no excuses, just like practice really saying no, and know that that thank you is coming. You're going to thank them. It's going to be thanks on both sides. And that was missing, I think, from most consent conversations or any kind of back and forth between improvisers note-wise. Because we're not supposed to give each other notes, right? But sometimes it comes up where somebody does something in a scene and later you want to say, hey, maybe don't do that. But you don't also want to get on somebody's list of like, oh, so-and-so is finicky, so-and-so is hard to work with, so-and-so is really picky, so-and-so will get mad at you after a show. So I started teaching my students and my colleagues, and not just teaching them, I guess, talking to them and working with them on this idea of like radical thanks, and like radical gratitude, and radical consent, which just means like it is part of every conversation. It's a little bit sidetracked now because we're not doing in-person improv. So we're not talking about it as much. Not that there's not consent in virtual improv, but it's a lot harder to violate somebody's boundaries when you can turn off your camera, your microphone, you know, and just like leave and you're not in physical danger. But then we're also missing the really fun side of intimacy, which is like worth all the work in finding out your boundaries and setting up your rules for yourself and the consent in the room, which is like delicious, sexy moments that happen on stage that I think we miss sometimes when we are just going for a more like status quo style comedy scene. Or if we haven't even talked about what level of touching we're willing to go towards as a group or as a duo, depending on what we're working on. So like, for instance, I have this rated R Harry Potter show called Consensual Hex. And the premise of the show is, first off, it's like 18 up only to get into the show. And it's all like live fan fiction on stage. And so by fan fiction, I mean the audience and the performers are picking pairings from the book and putting them into intimate situations. The favorite is like Draco and Harry are like boyfriend, boyfriend, or, you know, but it could go way further than that. And what I found in doing that show live, we did one in December and then in February, is that the audiences are hungry for that kind of comedy. Shows are packed, people howl with laughter, and the performers like kind of get a sort of high off of it. And it's all like clothed shows, like clothed scenes, like fully clothed, no nudity, but there is implied sex in the show. And it's funny what the mind will do with improv. You know, we imagine someone's apartment or workspace in improv, but you could also imagine, yeah, somebody's, you know, sexual experience. And it's like so incredibly fun and freeing. And also a big part of all of my work with that is like sex positivity, body positivity, and like vagina positivity, because in improv, historically, I definitely heard a lot of jokes at the expense of women's body parts. It was almost like a thing in the 90s to be like, oh, gross, pussies, you know, like how disgusting. So we made it a sort of a rule to like worship the, you know, like not just any genitals, but especially the female genitals in our work, to make us, because we can make a statement in a fun way that also could maybe even change some people's minds who come into the theater. If all the characters are like so excited to go down on Hermione or something, you know, like that's, you know, that's comedy, that's sexuality, and that's like radical progressive sex positive thinking, which is bizarre. So I kind of just, yeah, I fell backwards into it from just wanting more kissing or nice touch on stage. And it opened up this whole wing of this house that I really love.
You mentioned that we don't talk about it. And I just like people are afraid to talk about it or whatever. And I've certainly been in like boundary discussions that make people squirm. Like, why do you think we don't want to talk about it? Why do you think that, like, what's our fear?
I think we're so afraid of being wrong. Uh-huh. I think we're so deeply afraid of being wrong or being bad. Because I think being wrong leads to feeling like we were bad. Mm-hmm. And then that leads to feeling like we were bad on purpose.
Yes.
So I think boundary discussions and people thinking like, if you put rules in place, then I'll probably break those rules. And then I'll be wrong. And then I'll be bad. And then I'll be a bad person. Instead of like, oh, I'm learning a new way to interact with other people.
Right.
And I'm learning, if I learn rules and like boundaries, then actually that would allow more freedom and not less. But it feels like less when it's introduced.
Yeah, no, you're so right. And I've been in some, and I don't know, I'd love to know what you think and how it runs in your classes on this. But like, I've been in some of those circles where it's like, a whole bunch of people who have never played together before, and we do a quick round of like check-ins of like what we're comfortable with, which is good. But some people will be like, oh, whatever, I don't care. Like, do whatever you want. And yeah, you know, let me know on stage. And it's like, well, I don't know. Like,
I don't know.
How does that work?
It's almost like too much. It's like, well, just give me some guidelines.
Because also I feel like, are you going to respect what everyone else says if your perspective is like, oh, whatever, like, touch anywhere on me, what's the big deal?
It makes you wonder, like, of the jam model of doing improv. God, it's got some problems. It's got some problems, because I've also been in that situation many times where it's like a very quick check-in, and even in that moment asking myself what I'm okay with, I'm like, oh, I have to immediately think of the things I'm not okay with. And then it's almost like, I know I said the things I'm not okay with, but don't focus on those things. Sometimes I try to reframe it as like, what are you really okay with? And then it's like, okay, like if I'm like, oh, I love, like some people are like, I love to be picked up in scenes. Like, as long as you do it safely and you lift with your knees, it's super fun. Like, I know people who are like, I love to wrestle as long as it, like, you know, don't hurt me. But if I know that about somebody, then I'd totally be like, I'm going to initiate a scene with that person where I'm doing the thing they love. But you still also want to be able to say, like, I know some improvisers who just don't want to be touched at all. And it's important to like really, really like listen to that and remember it. But if you break it, to also be okay hearing that person say, hey, don't do that to me, and going, oh my gosh, thank you for telling me.
Right.
Instead of like, oh my God, I didn't mean to, or oh, I'm sorry, I forgot. But to go, oh, thank you for telling me. Oh, thank you. I'm so sorry. Thank you so much for telling me. And like try and make that like a positive interaction instead of a like, oh, I messed up, I'm wrong, I'm bad, I'm banned from improv. Or like, how dare I be in a situation where I could be bad?
And I love that you're like fostering that environment of talking openly about it and expressing, even after, you know, the check-in, but like following up with those boundaries or reminding people when necessarily. Because I remember when I first, like years ago, when I did the first check-in as a coach of a team, and we were like, we'd just gotten together as a team that was going to be together for a long time. And so we did the check-in right up top of like, what's everyone's boundaries? And I've personally, as the coach, felt like I had a responsibility Certainly I do. I'm not saying I don't. But like, do I have to monitor? Am I after a show going to have to be like, oh, so anyway, Sam, you touched Jerry's knee, and just remember, like, she doesn't like that. You know, and like, am I going to remember all these people's boundaries? But like, what's more appropriate and more productive is like teaching an environment of like, you guys also should always be talking about this and always reminding each other and being open to talk. Like, I don't think, hey, I remember I don't like being touched on the knee is an improv note. You know, it's not like, hey, you blocked me in the second scene of the Harold.
That's the other thing I realized too, was I was tired of doing that emotional labor as a director.
Right.
Or as a teacher. So I started telling people at the top of our project, whatever it was, or our class, I'm like, hey, we're all adults here. We all consented to be here.
Right.
And now it's your responsibility to express your boundaries. And it's okay if you don't know them until it comes up. But it's your job to like go to your fellow performers and your fellow partners and say what you need to say. Don't make me do it. I don't want to be your mom. I'm not your mom, and I'm not going to be your mom. And that was after years of being being the person who was like, oh, he said he didn't cheat. They don't want you. You need to, you know, and being like, wait a second, what am I doing? Like, I'm not getting paid enough. But besides that, like, it's just like not a good precedent for us to set. And to put on directors, though I do tell people, of course, like, of course, if there is something that comes up and you don't feel comfortable talking to that person, definitely come to me. But that's only if you can't solve it yourself. Can we just, I'm like, take charge of your creative journey. Don't make me do it. I don't want to.
Well, at least, yeah, like you're establishing that out in the open. It's not like you just started ignoring your that responsibility.
Yeah,
no,
it was important to say it.
Yeah.
And I think we're empowering, perhaps I've heard, for them to hear like, oh yeah, that's right. It is my own journey.
Yeah.
I am an adult.
Right.
I can express myself. I don't have to wait in line or like raise my hand.
Right. Yeah. Because this isn't school.
This isn't school. Man, the other great thing too is just to remind people is like, you can always express your consent on stage. And that's the best way to do it. Honestly, it is to teach, is if everyone knew that, this would be so huge, because then you take a moment, right? You're like, instead of like running at somebody to give them a hug in a scene, you open your arms and you give them a look like, eh? And then if they go for the high five, you're like, all right, high five. And you don't make it a thing. You don't say like, oh, you going for the high five instead of the hug? You're just like, hey, high five, you know?
Right.
So you like offer the thing. It's like offer, then there's eye contact, and then there's a connect. So, or if somebody goes to give you a hug and you don't want a hug from them, you're like, you can, you know, be like, no, or like whatever, like lodge it.
Yeah.
Or even as a character be like, nah, Benji doesn't hug, you know? Like,
yeah.
Or whatever it is, I find like that is probably better.
Right. Because there's this thing that happens that like, it causes all sorts of problems, but people get into a scene and they think that they're no longer human beings. Like their characters can't communicate as humans.
Yeah.
It's the same as like not hearing you. And instead of saying, excuse me, what did you say? I'll pretend I heard what you said. And then the scene gets derailed because I'm like, I'm improvising. I can't say that I didn't hear him.
Exactly.
But yeah, you can be like, yeah, whoever you said doesn't hug. Like you can just talk like a goddamn human who has feelings.
Yeah, you can just say like, hey, we didn't talk. Or you can even be like, we didn't talk about hugging. I know, but
yeah,
I'm a high five kind of person. If you want to keep the energy positive, it's just like a redirect.
Right.
It's just a quick redirect, or for like a kiss on the lips or the cheeks or whatever. I mean, especially post COVID world, this is a very different discussion, but it will come back fast, I'm sure. And so it's like at that moment, you know, you could be like, they come for the kiss and you're like, offer them to kiss your, you know, hand in that sort of regal old fashioned way and be like, I'd prefer it here. You know, there's little things you can do, but that takes a lot of, it takes a lot of bravery in a way to do that in the moment, and acknowledgement. It takes some work to get there as an improviser.
Yeah, because you can also feel like you're not yes-ending the hug, for example.
Absolutely. But it's really, that's why it's so important actually for every improviser to instill the idea of thank you for letting me know what you need, instead of like, I need to be right and okay all the time. It's more like I try to in my regular life when people say, oh, I don't want that, or I don't need that, to instead of going, oh, I didn't mean to go, thank you so much for telling me. And just have that be the first thing I say. Because if we go at things from an angle of gratitude, then it's hard to be combative or to feel wrong or bad.
You also you referenced like playing in a sport team, for example, as somewhere where touching might come up. And I reckon there'd be heaps of people who probably wouldn't even consider that their sort of bro-y sports gestures require consent as well.
Yeah.
They don't know for sure that their scene partners want to be grabbed around the neck and given a noogie.
yeah, or like shaken or like patted on the back really hard or like yelled in their ears, you know? And I love a rowdy scene. Like, I love it. I love climbing all over each other, rowdiness. But I think we have to be cognizant of different kinds of improvisers.
Uh-huh.
And not everybody's going to, that's not going to be everyone's cup of tea. That's something I started thinking about more and more. And, yeah. And, you know, we're having a lot of discussions worldwide about the status quo of improv. You know, it like favors white,
uh-huh.
usually, you know, cisgendered,
yeah.
heteronormative folks, especially men, who are comfortable or like, you know, maybe don't have a history of physical or mental trauma.
Right.
Usually younger. So, you know, I think you've seen that a lot. A lot of young men having success in improv. And I think it's in part because improv favors the bold, you know, has favored the bold, loud, pushy, grabby, touchy person who doesn't seem to have any boundaries, but in a way that's like fun, really fun for the audience to watch and makes people go, oh, wow, look at this person. But it's like all the things in their life that they got to pass on, you know, like not fear of being raped, not fear of being shot in the street. That's going to make you a certain kind of performer.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have all the answers, obviously, because for sure. It's always a work in progress. But I was, you know, I started opening up the fact that we should be telling each other our pronouns at the beginnings of meetings, yep. or things, and met with some resistance a few years ago and even still sometimes. And
yeah.
I use this phrase then, make space at the table, which I think is still actually a problematic phrase because that means it's still our table. So it's almost like we have to make this new table and make more considerations for how we're going to be. But I think even in that scene with all the, you know, sports players, somebody being like, who wants to come tackle me? You know, and then like that point, the improviser who wants to can run over and tackle them, you know? So you have that agency there to be like, I want to be tackled. And then like, you know, somebody, you know, comes for it or nobody does. And you're like, you know, that becomes a fun thing too.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's like reframing our thinking about how we interact with each other.
I've been thinking about this a lot, just to have a little sidestep from intimacy, just on what you're saying about like, you know, it being geared towards a certain type of person and who will find success in the art form. I find even like in the stuff that we teach, which is, you know, very inspired by UCB stuff, there's the whole frame and react thing of like, when you hear the unusual thing, you frame it as unusual and, you know, you start letting the person know that what they're doing, that their behavior is inappropriate in some way for their context. Even that concept is hard for some people or full of fear to be like, wait, no, I have to point out someone's wrong. I have like lived my whole life never doing that. And so yeah. Like some people are like, no, that's easy. You just listen and you say it. And it's like, no, but that's really hard for some people to hear that and say it.
Yeah, there's like so many levels to a person and how they move through the world and, you know, how they cope with the damages of being a human right now. And I think it's just more for me realizing over time, because as a female presenting person in improv, I remember early on, I had to really be like, I got to be loud. I got to push people out of the way. And I got to like take up space and sort of demand others give me space when appropriate. And I saw a lot of other women around me not able to rise up to that level but people weren't giving them the space. But there was a part of me that was, I think wrong now, that was like, oh, they need to fight harder. They need to push harder. If they really want it, they need to go for it. And yeah. I've totally changed my thinking on that. And I think back on my experience and I'm like, it wasn't always fun. You know, it was not fun to like tell people like, don't talk over me, you know, like on stage, like to literally have to almost shove somebody out of the way who kept standing in front of me whenever I tried to speak, you know, like every time I come on stage, there'd be people who would just stand right in front of me and block me, like, oh, pushing around them. And then people would be like, they think that was funny. They'd be like, oh, wow, she's really a go-getter. You know, she doesn't want anybody to stop her. And I was like, I guess that's a compliment, but like also that shouldn't have happened in the first place, you know?
I've also had like, I've had men in classes where I'm thinking of one guy in particular right now. It was very adorable. Sat down and was like, made the woman do the cooking in the kitchen or something.
Oh, yeah.
It was just like real, like on the nose. And I was like, hey, Phil, do you realize what just happened? And he like was just like, I can't believe it. Like he was just like head in his hands, like all that was automatic. Like,
yeah,
what is, I have to evaluate myself right now. Because it was just like, and, you know, it wasn't malicious on his side either. It was just like, you're doing this thing and let's have a environment where we can be like, hey, this thing exists and this is happening.
I think it's important to acknowledge that we have sexist, racist, capitalist tendencies ingrained in us. And those are not things that are good on the improv stage or in life. And we have to constantly fight and break down those things, and it's going to be uncomfortable.
Yeah.
And I think that's hard for people to sit in your discomfort. It's like, I want the easy answer. It's like, I don't know that there's an easy answer, but the only way out is through. That's true of a difficult improv scene too. The only way out is through. I mean, you can leave the scene, absolutely. But in the art form and the work that we want to do as people, if we really want to have the adaptable, beautiful improv world of our dreams, we have to be adaptable, and we have to like dig out the coal that has been placed in there. And that's probably what came out for your student, was like some, like, you know, not like, and it's not even that situation of it's you're a bad person, which, you know, I think I've felt before, like I'm a monster. I think everyone sometimes thinks they're a monster. They're like, oh, I'm a monster. And if people see that about me, they're all going to turn away. But it's more just acknowledging we all have monsters inside of us, and we have to work together to fight them, break them down, and remake them. Because we can't outdo our societal upbringing. You know, like we've all been through a similar system, regardless of where we come from. Almost nobody has come from a place that is, you know, without racism, sexism, homophobia, and capitalism.
One of my best friends, he's like, he once was like, on my best days, I'm 49% terrible.
Yes. I mean, like, you know, there's still a certain part of me that's like, well, I still bought some more plastic this week, you know, can't win them all.
Yeah, absolutely.
But it's like, if we are all like in that together, feeling like, all right, let's acknowledge this and keep moving forward. And when we mess up, it's okay.
Yeah.
We'll keep going.
I wanted to, you also referenced, you know, someone's first experience with intimacy on stage being like, you know, maybe something done for a joke, like a kiss or a hug or whatever, as a joke. Mm-hmm. And I think in our experience at TIC, there is very little intimacy. There's certainly platonic sort of gestures, but there's not a lot of closeness. And I honestly think, as someone who was there from the beginning of the company, I think it's a reaction, like, in our community to, like, there was a few people in the beginning who would use kissing or like abrupt moments of intimacy as jokes, as just like a chance to get the audience to go, whoa, instead of instead of it being what the scene was asking of the moment. Like I know of certain even times where, like, in the middle of a Harold, a scene would start with a person walking right across the stage and kissing the other person. And it's like, I didn't know one asked for that.
Yeah, the shock laugh.
Yeah, and I think the pendulum swung to be like, that's, people aren't enjoying, the performers aren't enjoying that. And our reaction was like, just, it's non-existent at this point. Like, I certainly kiss Mario in swing set shows, but I've been playing with him for 6 years.
Yeah. Yeah.
But like in a ensemble show on a Saturday night, I wouldn't dare, because it's just not in our culture at the moment. So I love that you're talking about it.
I think that's really common, that it's one or the other. And that's what was happening in Austin years ago, at least what I could notice from the Hideout Theater, but also most work that I saw on stage was like, either it was like awkward, forced intimacy for a big laugh, or it was people not ever touching each other or barely touching each other or acknowledging that part of humanity. And I was lucky enough to work with Parallelogram Phonograph, my four-person ensemble. And we had gotten to a place where we could be a lot more intimate. We used to even have this terrible rule where any of us could slap each other for real on stage. And we had to like take that out, because I think one time Valerie actually hit Kareem too hard on the jaw, and he was like pissed. But we were like, but Kareem, you were one of the proponents of the rule in the first place. So we kind of had to like, okay, that was young P. Graf's naivete coming out. But I realized how much the audience would lean in when somebody was like sweet on stage, or when if people were playing a couple, not even like a kiss on the lips necessarily, but like, you know, holding hands or cuddling on the couch chairs or, you know, a kiss on the cheek or just like a little nuzzle or something. It just, it would open so much up in the show. And it was like every single one of my classes, people would afterwards be like, all of those scenes were some of the most engaging stuff I've ever seen. And most of the scenes weren't even, nothing bad happened. It was just like two people being sweet in different ways. One of my favorite setups for that is like superhero and trusted butler or medic. And so it's kind of like this Batman, Bruce Wayne and Alfred Pennyworth, if you're familiar with Batman.
Yes.
Dynamic, which is really lovely, because there's an inherent relationship of trust and love in most intimate relationships, even the platonic ones. And so there's even something sweet about an injured, gruff superhero getting patched up. Even just that moment of just like, I don't need that, you know. Let me help you. Oh, okay. It does feel nice. Thank you. You know, like, really lovely. So, yeah.
When I saw, it must have been 2014, you and I previously, before this podcast established, I was there in 2014. I couldn't remember. but when I saw your... Nothing and Everything season, the Chekhov stuff, I remember just being like mouth agape the whole time at how like sincere everything was, and and the relationships were so real, and there were intimate moments between you and Pete, I think his name is.
Oh, Peter.
Yeah. On stage, and like, I just remember it like, and you guys have won theater awards, or at least been nominated for them. I can't recall. I've told people ever since then, like, there is a level of commitment to theatre at the Hideout that, like, I've since then aspired to, like, and I think this is part of it, like, the genuine relationships and having an ensemble who are willing to, like, be close with one another and have those hard conversations. Well, they shouldn't be hard, but have those scary conversations to, like, improve the work.
100%. Yeah, it was like kind of unlocking something magical when we started doing that. And it wasn't for everyone, but it was lovely to realize that, oh, in improv, we could still relish the things that we relish in real life. And it could feel real, actually. It could feel real. Like, you could feel this like unbelievable romantic elation as a character. Or like deep disappointment as a character too. And that could be heartbreaking and a pivotal thing too, and beautiful and delicious.
Yeah. I mean, I've never given as much of a shit about characters in improv as I did that night. Like, you know, cause like,
yeah.
I've seen some really good improv, but like, the majority of the improv I see is like, everyone's got one foot out of the character pool. Like, they're not all the way in on what's happening. Yeah. Because there's a little part of them that's like, well, I'm doing some improv. but that night watching, I mean, you guys got a standing ovation that night, and it was earned because I was sitting there caring so much about that show. And yeah. Anyway, I'm just complimenting you.
Yeah, no, it's nice to hear it. It's nice to remember that, especially right now where it's harder to do more theatrical improv on Zoom. I feel like a little out of touch with that side of things. And it's nice to hear it because it's making me have like the physical body remembrance of doing that show. Oh God, I hope we can keep it going because the business is struggling right now.
I bet. Yeah, I bet.
It is like Cold Town Theater, which is in Austin, very also UCB inspired, just shut its doors. They lost their lease.
Yeah.
So there's no physical building for them, though, of course, it's continuing. And a couple other big venues in Austin closed. A big stand-up comedy venue closed. The Hideout is in a lot of debt.
Yeah.
And there is a fear of like, okay, we keep hanging on and racking up debt from unpaid rent.
Right.
When can we get on the stage again? Because as you notice that the Hideout was really beautiful, built out stage situation.
Yeah.
And we're just like, I don't know. It's like if we had to start over.
Yeah.
Where would we be even? Can we even have like the light, sounds, the stage, backstage setup?
Yeah.
There won't be any lack of people wanting to do it.
Right. Yeah.
But it's also like how and where, it's making all of this so bittersweet to talk about.
Yeah.
Because all the creative freedom that was in play.
Yeah.
We just took for granted. Like, oh, okay, of course.
Yeah.
Mm.
Mm. On that down note, that ends.
And that has been Ralph Kingsbury.
Now for a practical nugget.
I think if you're ever in that place as an improviser where you're in your head about yourself and your own performance, it's a great idea to look at your scene partner or scene partners and think about how great it is that they're there with you being creative in the moment and just shower them with character traits, setups, something that'll make them laugh or smile. Usually that will instantly take you out of your own head and put you back in the present moment, which is where you want to be in the first place if you're even doing improv.
So our suggestion is Palace. Oh, goodness.
Goodness. Goodness me.
Goodness, it has been a long, long winter.
It's been a long winter.
I...
Good king of mine. King next to me.
Yes. King. I'll tell you what I've learned in this winter. King next to me.
Yes.
There's not a rug in this house that I enjoy. There's no blanket nor rug that I actually feel a true fondness for.
Yes, no pot, nor vase.
No.
Nor trinket, nor curtain.
No.
That I have any affection for in my eye, mind, or heart.
No.
King next to me.
King next to me, the colder this house got, the more my disdain for it grew. And I can only resolve that we must conquer nearby lands and move away.
Ah, conquering. Isn't it fun when we conquer things?
Does that make you feel good to hear the word conquer once again? Think about it.
Oh, yes. Can you say it one more time?
You want to go conquer the lands nearby, king next to me?
Yes, I do. Just one more time.
Conquer. You want to conquer somewhere?
Oh, my God, yes.
Hey, I was just wondering.
Yes.
Did you want to maybe go for a stroll one evening?
Stroll.
Yeah, down the old dirt trail.
Yes.
And at the end, we conquer.
Yes.
You like that?
Yes, I do. What about you? Would you like to pillage.
Oh, goodness me.
Nearby villages.
Oh, you know exactly what to say to me, don't you?
I do. A little bit of pillaging.
Oh, good God. That's so good. I'd love to pillage. Please.
Just shake the frost right off of our coats and our crowns.
Pillage that frost right off my body.
Yes. Warm it up. Nothing like a sword and some blood.
No. Goodness gracious.
My God.
Summer is coming, and so is my impending joy. I can feel myself growing and becoming alive again.
Yes, I see it. Your skin is shining, king, next to me.
Your
eyes, bright.
I'm feeling like a king now.
Yes, not just a statue on a throne.
For too long, you and I have been statues on this throne. No one visiting. Too cold.
No. Too cold. Too dark. Everything still and quiet.
I can't wait.
No longer, though.
No longer.
Right around the corner. You can hear the birds chirping outside.
Yeah, there's birds.
Just quiet.
Whose
just
lands quiet. We will conquer. The trees will conquer.
Trees, bulldozing all the trees. Down with the trees.
Get rid of all the nature.
Get rid of all of it. Get rid of it. What's such power?
There you have it, my friends. That was the impressive Casey Beeler. Remember, if you enjoyed spending some time in Casey's brain, you can do more of that at caseybeeler.com. or on Instagram at Casey Beeler. And you can watch them perform in Parallelogramophonograph, some virtual shows at thehideouttheatre.com. I'll have all those links in the show notes. Check all those out if you are the kind of person who likes having a good time. That's all from me now. Enjoy your life until the next time we speak. My thanks to you for listening.
Thanks for listening to the Improv Conspiracy Podcast. If you enjoyed the show, we'd love for you to take a moment to rate and review us on your preferred service. 5 stars, please. We've got heaps of original sketch comedy on our YouTube page. Subscribe at youtube.com/improvconspiracy.